Hello, I'm Paul Goddard.
I'm Jeff Watts.
And welcome to the Agile Podcast, the show in which Jeff and I discuss what Agile is really all about over a pint or two in the pub.
In each episode, we chat about our experiences as two Agile coaches in today's ever-changing world.
So grab yourself a drink from the bar, pull up a chair, and enjoy what I'm sure you will agree is probably the best Agile pub-related podcast in the world.
Oh, apologies, everyone, if I sound different. Half my face is not working.
Jeff's, don't worry, people, he hasn't suffered a stroke. You have to explain why, Jeff.
I've just come back from the dentist and had a tooth very significantly repaired.
So Sabrina's got a similar thing. My wife's got a similar thing where she kind of now just wants the tooth to be taken out because there's hardly anything left of said tooth. Or is it not that bad yet?
There's a shell left. And he did say, yeah, in 18 months' time, you might want to make a decision to take it out. But for now, it's okay. So, yeah, we'll see.
Are you sore now? You got face ache?
No, I'm not sore. I can't even feel my AirPod in that ear. And of course, you're not supposed to eat or drink anything hot or anything because you can burn yourself and bite your cheek and tongue and stuff. Yeah. Of course, when you can't do something, you want to do it more. So now I'm ravenously hungry.
because I
can't eat, yeah. But hopefully by the time this is finished, the anesthetic will have started wearing off.
And you'll be in extreme pain probably.
We'll see.
You'll be desperate for this thing.
I've got a straw for my bottle of beer.
A child's straw? Or is that a
hen? Oh, yeah, it's a child's straw.
Looks like a hen weekend straw, rather.
Yes.
Some kind of
dolphins. Dolphins, though.
Oh, it's dolphins. Okay. Nothing too serious. Okay. Suitable for kids.
Oh, no. I've dropped it in the...
Ladies and gentlemen, you can't see that, but Jeff dropped his straw into the bottle. And now he can't use the straw. So this might be a long podcast because Jeff's now using a paperclip, I think, to try and get the straw back out. Do you remember a TV show called Scrum Mastery Challenge? That was very similar to what Jeff's trying to do now.
I was only thinking about that the other day. Maybe we should do it again.
It's still on YouTube, surely.
Yeah, maybe a new version.
Where I probably look, I've probably got no grey in my hair or my beard. I probably look 30 years younger than I do now.
Yeah. So I'm drinking, for the record.
Yeah.
I'm sipping through a straw a bottle of Snorkeler's Sea Salt IPA.
That's a mouthful for someone who's had a filling. Say that again, nice and quickly.
Snorkeler's Sea Salt IPA.
Okay. Was it Dutch? Was it just a step of the Dutch accent?
I think it's German, actually.
Okay.
Brauwasser. Yeah, I think it's German.
But hello to all our German listeners. Hey?
It's flipping lovely.
Is it?
Yeah, it's one of my favourites. Mm-hmm. It sounds a bit weird having salt in a beer, but it works. For me, anyway.
So is it? It's obviously wouldn't go down well with me, who likes sweet things. But
I don't know. Do you like salted caramel?
Yeah, I suppose. Well, that's more sugar than sweet than salt, though, isn't it? Surely.
Well, yeah, proportionally.
Yeah,
but and this is more beer than salt.
Yes, but you can obviously.
Although it is alcohol free.
So. Oh yeah, I'm also going. I've gone alcohol free, Jeff, because it's a lunchtime here in the UK when we're recording this, and I've gone Copperberg, strawberry and lime, alcohol free. It's basically when I was looking at it, it's expensive squash, isn't it? That's what it is. It's very expensive fizzy squash,
and I've got slightly fizzy, is it?
I've got it in a little Agile podcast.
Very good
glass available from the website.
Still is. Still got a few in the shed.
Yeah, very good.
Ready to be shipped out with the Agile Podcast bottle opener that I used.
Product placement.
On the Agile Podcast.
Nearly spilt his bottle of
beer, Matt.
Oh, he's all over the place. These drugs that they've, the Novocaine he's been injected with, is playing havoc with his coordination, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, dear.
He's dropped beer all over his keyboard.
Oh,
What a mess. So again, I'll fill
anyway.
While Jeff clears up. What are we talking about today, Jeff? What's the subject? What's on?
I don't know. What have you been doing? You've been doing some facilitation stuff, haven't you, recently?
Yeah, I've been.
So facilitate it for me.
Very, very enjoyable course. New course. My agile facilitation course. With one of my favorite companies, local companies that I've done a lot of work with. And it was really good. Scary, but good in a good way. And the feedback was really good. And I think for me, it was a little bit of a step into some new, just new stuff. And it wasn't all new stuff, but it was in a new order. It was, a new routine. To try out some new jokes, you know, Jeff, a bit of stand-up comedy in there, as you know,
really?
We do. But no, it's good fun, and I had some good, some very enthusiastic. It's an opportunity for everyone on the course to do some facilitation, and it actually became less agile focused, and that doesn't mean to sound like a bad thing. That was actually a good thing that actually we proved that just facilitatory skills are viable and useful in just about every context. So yeah, it was good and did a bit of conflict stuff. We did a lot of the stuff that went down really well, or actually was kind of controversial, was the listening stuff.
Controversial?
Well, yeah, it was. I think because people thought I was trying to catch them out.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people thought, well, I'm good at listening. And then I gave them a quiz, and then they got some wrong answers, and they were basically trying to, kind of challenge the answers to the quiz. Around the listening that they what they thought they'd heard,
right?
Which was actually quite different, or wasn't? Was it different? But it was incomplete in terms of what they'd stated happened in
yeah.
said story. It was an exercise that we've done a lot before. Well, you've probably me and you used to do it years back, but I kind of pulled out the archives for this course because it's we had a little section on listening and it was the Goldilocks exercise, which you probably remember. Mm-hmm. And for those listeners that haven't been on one of Jeff and I's courses about five, six, maybe more years ago now. But basically the exercise is to play an audio clip of the Goldilocks story to a group. And it's about 3.5 minutes long. And then the group kind of asks some questions. You kind of prep them. You say there's going to be some questions on what you've heard afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the top score in the class was 11 out of 12. But most people got kind of 6 or 7 out of 12. And they was kind mm-hmm. of throwing their arms in there saying, it doesn't say that. It didn't say that. And kind of second guessing what the narrator of the story actually said. So there was some kind of ambiguity in there. But it's amazing how people just kind of jump to conclusions and based on the assumptions of what they think they heard.
Yeah. Yeah. And just expect what they expect to hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's you can get quite lazy, can't we, when listening? Quite lazy.
Well, I think it's really hard. I think it's very hard to listen. And I don't think it's a skill that you deliberately practice. It's hard to find time to deliberately practice it.
It's one of those skills that you don't necessarily think you need to practice because
no.
I can hear you, therefore I can listen.
Yeah,
but it's not as simple as that, is it?
I think we probably spend 80 to 90, probably more than 90% now in terms of just listening at a very superficial, cosmetic level. We'd have to deliberately put our phones down and actually, you know, make time to listen to what people are actually saying, or maybe even what they're not saying.
True.
Yeah, that's
different different levels of listening, aren't they? That's not easy to say.
So I'm going to have to listen to you a bit harder today if you start slurring your words.
True. Yeah.
Do you think it's harder to listen online?
Contextual. So if I was, for example, going to a webinar where I wasn't participating, I think I would get distracted more if I was not present in the room. But if I was in the room, I would be able to focus more and listen better. Now, those are things within my control. I could turn off those or get rid of those distractions. And sometimes I will actually close my eyes while listening so that I do focus. But if it's a one-to-one, so if I'm doing some of my one-to-one coaching, for example, then I might say that actually remote I find slightly easier to listen to. Maybe. I'm just thinking as I speak now. Certainly no worse, I don't think.
Yeah. I think it's because... I mean, it depends what setup you've got at home as well, with what tools that you use, and you know, how delicate. Because I remember back kind of early pandemic days, a lot of people moved over to Discord, didn't they? Do you remember Discord?
Uh-huh.
I think we dabbled with it once or twice.
We did.
But
yeah.
the feedback was that Discord was tended to be a bit more realistic in terms of the quality of the audio that you heard, and not just in terms of the voice itself, but in terms of the how it tools like Zoom and Teams would actually just cut you off as soon as they hear you, you know, kind of momentarily pause, so that the quality of what was of the audio coming at you was worse and was more difficult to tune into and less natural. I also think that there's, just looking at me now, what you can't see, Jeff can't see this, the listeners certainly can't see this, is the state of my desk, right? So there's a lot going on for me on the desk, and it's so easy to get distracted. And also, and again, listeners can't see this, but behind me on my Zoom kind of background, I've got a lot going on there for you. And I know, obviously me and you, we've chatted on Zoom a lot, and I know what, when I come on camera, you probably know what you're expecting to see. But for someone who's never spoke to me before, whilst it's a conversation starter about all the 80s retro Lego and games consoles I've got behind me, you can sometimes find your eyes wandering in terms of, oh, you're more interested now in what's going on behind you than actually what's coming out of your mouth.
I did find myself yesterday trying to work out what the name of a book was behind somebody who was talking. But why is it important?
Yeah.
Why do we care? When you're teaching people listening skills, why are you teaching them that? Why do they need to be able to listen well?
Well, in this context, it's around facilitation, about how you're reading the room, how you're sensing emotions, in terms of engagement, in terms of potentially conflict, emotional awareness, emotional intelligence, being able to more acutely pick up on those things when you can hear them, and hearing what, like I say, what people were saying, what people are not saying. To talk about distractions, there's an distraction now. I'll turn off my, I don't know if you heard that, but another Apple notification came in, so I turned it off. So just in terms of facilitation, but in terms of being present, being in the moment, tuning in, when there's nothing else going on for you, which again is a lot of what with my beloved improvisational kind of theory and practices. I remember speaking to Andy Smart, God rest his soul. He's Andy Smart, one of the Comedy Store players who sadly passed away. I think it was last year now. It must have been last year. And he said, I'd chat with him after one of their shows, and he said, literally, almost, the audience is superfluous. When he's on stage, he said, it's like being in my lounge at home with my friends. I'm completely in tune with what they're saying. I'm not listening. I'm aware of the audience, but I'm not listening to them. It's just I'm just completely there for the people that are next to me on stage. And I think it's a similar thing with facilitation and coaching and being present. There's nothing else for you. If you're immersed in it, there's nothing else for you going on, if other than what's in that room or what's that conversation that you're having.
Yeah, I had a situation a couple of weeks ago where I was running a workshop, and there was a lot going on outside the room that I wasn't really. I mean, I kind of knew it was going on. I knew there were people out there, but it didn't really affect me. But it did affect some of the other people in the workshop, and they were commenting on how loud it was. I genuinely thought that was an interesting thing, the fact that it didn't really affect me that much, but it did affect other people. And I don't really know why, but I was really focused on what these people were saying, and I could tune out that noise out there. I know that someone is power hosing their patio outside here. I can tell it's going on, but it's not bothering me. It's not stopping me from listening to you. That's more important to me than what's going on out there. And I think maybe I have just practiced that consciously a lot over the years, is really tuning in to people and tuning other things out. And they appreciate that. I think people really appreciate it. If you can pick up not just what they're saying, but how they're saying it and how they're feeling as well. I help people to try and develop that sense as well. It's something that we've played together a lot, intuitions. So helping people just talk to each other, and when they're listening, play back something that they heard word for word, like really push yourself. Don't put your spin on it, word for word. This is something I heard you say. This is something that I felt from you, so an emotion. And then the third one is an intuition that I've got. So just, it's a little part of me. I'm not sure what it is, but it's telling me this. And I'm going to take a leap of faith and interpret, use my intuition, my instinct, and play that back. And if you get that right, that's really powerful. I think a lot of people don't get heard anywhere near as much as they want. They might get listened to, but they don't necessarily get heard. And that can go a long way to diffusing conflict. You mentioned conflict at the start as well. It's people that actually genuinely heard rather than just fobbed off, or okay, you've said your piece, now shut up.
Yeah,
that goes a long way to diffusing any real tension.
Yeah, and just playing back. Yeah, sometimes it's just the best service we can offer is just to show that we've listened, isn't it? People just, like I say, people just want to be heard.
And the contrary to that, we both know a few people that we would label reloaders, who, as Stephen Covey would say, they're not listening with the intent to understand, they're listening with the intent to reply. And if anything, I know some people who will make noises to try and get you to either hurry up to finish or actually stop mid-sentence. Like, I'll be talking and the other person will because they don't want to listen to what you're saying, they just want the airtime. And that really does negatively affect relationships, I think. They're not listening to you, they don't care. Just your words are eating into their potential airtime.
So, did you watch this this year's Traitors? Did you see any Traitors on BBC? Great. If you
have, I tried to watch it.
I kind of think myself, and I'm going to give credit to the lovely Jean Tabaker, who's again no longer with us, but she introduced me and you were there, 2006, to a game called Werewolves. So I like to think that we're kind of an integral part of the Traitors, where Traitors came from.
Still got a pack here. Look how warm that is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So for listeners that couldn't see that, Jeff just held a pack of Werewolves that I've probably had since 2006.
Well, I found €2 as well.
But Yeah, so Gene introduced us to but anyway, I was going to the Traitors. It was a BBC One episode, and it was copied and aired around. There's an Australian version. There was a US version, but in this year's every day or every part every episode, they have a round table, and it's basically an opportunity to they're trying to encourage conflict. That's what that's trying to do, but it's amazing how many people as soon as they hear someone say something that they disagree with, they want to interject, which is kind of natural. But the pushback is, let me finish. You said your piece, let me finish. And it's kind of how hard it is, especially if you hear something that your brain or you fundamentally disagree with, not to interject. And I know that different teams will have different methods of preventing that, or at least kind of, you know, it's classic, isn't it? Putting your hand up or kind of like hand signal to say, mm-hmm. No, disagree. Here's where I am without shouting you down. I'm the international signal of this offends me or I've got a problem with this. But that even that requires real skill and real I think it's discipline as well, because we're all guilty of it, you know, because we're emotional people, and when we hear something that we don't like or that isn't true or whatever reasons, it's hard not to jump in. But you've got to give everyone a fair crack of airtime, wouldn't you? But airtime is another exercise we've done in our advanced classes of just trying to play back airtime. About how much time people spend talking and how much time. Is it possible to listen while you're talking? Surely is that biologically impossible? Possible?
Probably. Yeah. maybe at a superficial level, but I certainly can't be analyzing or interpreting or anything like that, I don't think.
Well, you said this.
I saw this amazing clip of this ventriloquist who's doing this routine, and he's basically pretending that the microphone is talking to him, and he upsets the microphone, like by grabbing it and moving it up and tapping it. So you broke my nose, that kind of thing. So he's talking and the microphone's talking, and this guy's obviously not moving his lips, and then he gets to the point where the microphone's so annoyed with him, he says, well, I'm going to get my own back on you. And the way that the microphone gets his own back on him is he makes this ventriloquist talking out of sync. It's incredibly clever.
Wow.
So his lips are saying one thing, but his voice is like a second delayed. I think that's just
clever.
An incredibly talented thing. So in a way, he's kind of doing that. But no, I don't think really you can... we should link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, well, I see it's a YouTube thing.
I think I saw it on Instagram, but yeah.
But saying about listening while you're talking, and you've pointed this out before, and we've discussed this before. You can be at a dinner party, or you can be in a crowded pub, and having a conversation with someone, but you will hear your name being mentioned by someone across the room.
Yeah,
because you're subtly looking at your brain can't help but to pick out vital bits of information that may well be personal to you.
So that's true. And I was in it, and I've interrupted you now, right? So I've done a classic thing, right?
You're reloading.
So I've interrupted you, and I'm turning it back to me, right? So this is one of the toxic listening traits of the narcissist. I'm taking your story, and I'm taking it back to me, and in a way, I'm also going to one-up you, right?
Okay.
Because not only can you hear your name across a crowded room, but I was at a meeting, work-wise, a sort of networking thing, really, I suppose. And I was chatting to some people, and people I'd never met didn't say my name, but they said Cheltenham, which is where I live. And that stuck out. And immediately I stopped listening to the person that I was talking or listening to having a conversation with. And I immediately looked around and thought, okay, that's someone who's mentioned my town. I'm going to speak to them later on about that. But yeah, it doesn't just not just your name. If someone mentioned Coventry City while you were in a crowded room, your ears would metaphorically prick up.
Absolutely, yeah. And it happens if the radio. I have quite often. I have the radio on at home if I'm working, Just again, because isn't that weird that I'm not listening to the radio? That's cosmetic listening, right? It's just, but I feel more, I think there's a sense of comfort from background noise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not listening to it. Mm-hmm. And there was, wasn't there, there used to be, I've gone on a different tangent. I'll come back to that. But yeah, I can, if Coventry City, big FA Cup win on the weekend, by the way, it gives you a time of this podcast, semi-finals. But if they're mentioned on the radio, I'll momentarily be distracted and I'll hear that, and then you're drawn towards that. But there used to be I don't know if it's still there, and I don't know where it is, but there was a room, wasn't there, that was so well soundproofed that you could only stay in there for a certain amount of time before it came too uncomfortable, because you could literally hear your own heart beating, like the blood being pumped around your body. And it made people feel ill, because there's, our brain is so used to background noise that when it's completely removed, we find it quite disorientating and quite unnerving and quite uncomfortable. I don't like, I need a little bit of ambiance.
Well, this is interesting, right? So if we were just going to offer some almost superficial advice, then we'd say, right, make the environment as quiet as possible so you can focus on what you want to listen to. What we're saying here is actually different people will have different levels or different types of environmental noise that will accentuate their ability to listen. So you can concentrate more if you've got a little bit of radio in the background. Perhaps not in a one-to-one deep conversation. Maybe you can tune it out then. I don't know. But so sometimes maybe adding noise makes it easier to listen, which brings me, wasn't where I was going to go, but hey, let's go with it. There's a video that I think you're familiar with about making things more difficult so that we take them more in. So there was putting questions in a more difficult to read font, or not questions, but information. And because people had to work harder to read it, they remembered it more. So I think there's an element of that. But where I was going to go was, I said earlier on that I close my eyes sometimes if I want to focus on a webinar to avoid distractions. But actually just getting rid of some of the extra sensory stimulation can accentuate another sense. So if I close my eyes, then there's less for me to be distracted by. There's more, less for me to focus on. So that will bring up that sense of listening to compensate for that. But why should we bother? You said about facilitation, right? So if I'm a facilitator, then I want to be able to pick up, I want to be able to hear what people say, first of all. I want to hear what they're saying behind the words. I want to bring them into the conversation. I want to maybe join dots and find patterns and, you know, remember what other people said so that I can help play that back to other people. I can even play back to them when I'm noticing an inequity of airtime. What about outside of a workshop scenario? How else might being a good listener be of value to us in the workplace?
I don't think it has to just be in the workplace, but I think we can offer emotional support to people who just, and I can think of a couple of instances now outside of work where the best service, the best thing I can provide is not to talk, is just to listen. And just to be present and just to hear what people are saying and give them a sense of comfort's the wrong word, but just a sense of companionship and support.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you're not alone, and it's just demonstrating that I have a human skill that we all need. And so I think that implies probably for me right now more out of work than it does in work. I think we can build within a work setting, we can build rapport if we listen. We can, I think people appreciate listening skills, although it might not be something that, from a leadership perspective, people are looking for leaders to potentially say more than they listen in terms of their guidance, in terms of giving advice, maybe. But I think there's still a valuable skill for leaders in listening to what people are, what their concerns are, what their thoughts are, what their ideas are. And if you want to collaborate with people, I think you've got to demonstrate a good sense of listening.
That's true. Did I often do an exercise with product people around listening. And we spend actually quite a bit of time on the opposite, which is product people often have far too many people telling them things, making requests of them, giving them feedback they don't necessarily want, contradictory feedback, you know, and hippos in the room and so on. But great product people are very good listeners, and they use that skill to avoid their cognitive biases taking over. So even if, so first of all, a lot of product people won't even ask their customers or their users what they want. They'll have their own ideas in mind and they'll build the product they want. And we've got firsthand experience of that with the technical successes that we were exposed to and part of. So the next step is to ask customers, perhaps on an incremental basis. We've built this, what do you think? I say, oh, that's terrible, yeah. Build this instead. Okay, thanks for the feedback. Maybe I could ask you before I start building it, whether you like the idea of this. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I could ask you, what challenge do you need resolved? Rather than what do you want, what do you need? Of course, sometimes people don't know what they want until they can see what they don't want. But where am I going with this? Well, even if we ask our customers and our users questions, those questions are very rarely objective. There's usually some subjectivity in there. There's an element of leading them. There's inference in there. And so one exercise I often do with product people is ask them to just listen to their customers. So just tell me about your day. Tell me the last time you used a product. Tell me the last time you bought a product like this. And then just let them talk.
Mm.
And when they finish talking, just say, can you tell me more about that? Or what would you do next? Or what did you do next? And that sense of just letting them talk and listen for the pain points, listen for the opportunities, listen for the assumptions, rather than you making your own inferences or giving them the opportunity to tell you what they think you want to hear, can be really enlightening.
Yes, nice. Very good.
Almost the opposite of an interview, in a way.
Yeah. I think as well, with the whole product, and something I do a lot with product owners and product managers now, it's easier to listen to a story than it is to listen to data.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if you're going through metrics or data points on a spreadsheet, it's you can almost expect people to switch off when you're going through stats. But if you can, as a product leader, if you can talk through a scenario where a user or a customer's and a bit of background about what they're up to and what their struggles are, it becomes more. And that's the same with any, in life. We are much more adept to listening to stories than we are to interpreting data. So it's a more of a fundamental skill to us as human beings, is to listen. You're just more interested in stories. We're just more interested.
Yes.
And
there's two sides to that. So first of all, I'm going to agree with what you said and say that recently, because I did a storytelling workshop with people, and I created a story, essentially, on the spot, told them a story. They didn't realize this was a storytelling thing. I was just giving them an anecdote about the topic that was of interest to them. And then about 10, 20 minutes later, maybe, I asked them some questions about that story. And so, could you remember the name of my boss? Can you remember the name of the people in my team? Can you remember the name of the project? Can you? And they, as a group, they did. They remembered all of it. And their view was that they played the story back in their head to remember that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Yet, you started our conversation by saying you told them the story of Goldilocks.
Mm.
And that story led to them with false memories or inaccurate memories or imprecise memories.
Yeah.
So I'm inferring from that that the story needs to be almost not necessarily unique, but it needs to be something that doesn't invoke their confirmation bias or their what they expect to hear.
Yeah, and I think you're right, and I think there's also an element there in terms of the speaker.
Mm.
So. We're in danger here of stretching into another, perhaps a subject for another podcast here, but that was the Goldilocks story was an audio file played through a speaker in the class.
Right.
So they couldn't see the person speaking,
mm-hmm.
which you could imply, you know, there's closing your eyes theory that, you know, you should be listening harder if you're not looking at it. But I think with storytelling, especially the narrator, has an important role. Now, if that person was in the room and if they were using their themselves, would that would certainly create more engagement? Would it aid memory? Don't know. But you know, you look at Stephen Fry is a good example of someone who read all the Harry Potter books. Did that stick with my kids more than if I'd have read it? Probably yes. You know what I mean? So I think there are good storytellers amongst us.
Yeah.
And I think that has a bearing on, because I can, some of my very good friends, great storytellers, and I can remember the story, but not so much. It wasn't, my friend Rob, and you know Rob, he told us a story about a conger eel, right? Now, it's the story itself is kind of short and very, you know, they went on a fishing trip, right? And
mm-hmm.
but just the way that he told a story and the picture he created with his words,
yeah,
made it more memorable.
Mm.
I can remember the filling in the sandwiches that they ate on this boat. But it's strange, isn't it? I think, you know, I think it does sometimes lean back to who's telling the story can have a bearing on how much people listen and how much people take in.
Yeah. There are people who are, well, I think storytelling is a skill that everyone can develop. And those that have developed that skill more have a greater effectiveness at imparting sticky information that sticks with the listener. Bob Mortimer, I can see the book behind you, and he's a great storyteller, and I can remember, yeah, those stories better than others.
You are, as ever, a Bristolian penguin. That's the one I heard yesterday. yeah, train guy. If anyone's not, we'll have to put loads of links on that to this stuff. But it's an engaging listen. Engaging this.
Yeah.
And if you've seen Bob Mortimer on Would I Lie to You, it's, again, the memorable stories he creates. And I think some of them are based on the truth, but there's a lot of character names which I just thought of, like Barbara Lighthouse, that are just created off the top of his head. And Ron Caramel. Ron Waffle and John Caramel, the two reporters on the Gazette. He just creates memorable names out of nowhere. Yeah. So it's, yeah, and that makes it both humorous and like you say, sticky. It sticks with people.
Yeah.
Very good.
So if we wanted to get better at listening, what would our top tips be to get better at listening?
To get better at listening, practice it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, give yourself, I think it is like an exercise. So like The one that I use quite a lot is podcasts. So if you're on a long car journey or if you train to work, whatever it might be, and you do listen to podcasts, try and make a conscious effort to, at the end of your journey, when it's safe to do so, try and write down quotes, like Jeff said, on a reasonable level. So direct things that were said, perhaps emotions that you picked up on from the speaker, or maybe even links that you made from what was said to your, how would you apply it to what you're trying to do, or something that wasn't directly said. I think that's quite a nice exercise. That's a good tip, I'd say.
Yeah.
Any others from you?
Repeat back.
Yeah.
So as well as practicing, if you had the opportunity to test what you've heard, that can be helpful. All those people that were listening to that Goldilocks exercise, that was practice. But until they were faced with the data that some of the information they thought they'd listened to was wrong, they wouldn't have recognized it. Practice, get some feedback, and go into it with the intent of listening. So set yourself a goal of, I'm going to really listen to this. Mm-hmm. And actually repeating back what you've heard not only helps you reflect on how effective your listening is, but has the effect of people being listened to. So it increases the impact of the listening. So there's a double difference there.
Yeah, and I've got one more, which we should pay homage to, back to 2010. Lee Devin, do you remember Lee?
Yeah.
Lee Devin came to the Scrum Gathering in Amsterdam, and Jeff and I were there, went to one of his workshops. It stuck with me. He introduced me to the idea, and us to the idea, of focus, wander, return. So like a three-step kind of process. And the tip here is, firstly, acknowledge when you've stopped listening, when you've become distracted. And you mm-hmm. can kind of expect it, because I think we'd all agree that there's so many things out there now in our daily lives that are there to distract us. Mm. Look at how long it takes for when you're doom scrolling on Instagram, how long do you typically stay on something before you skip onto the next one? So it's kind of built into our daily lives that we're going to get distracted by something else. Something else will start sparkling at us, and we'll be distracted by it. So Lee's technique was focus, wander, return. Establish when your mind has wandered, and say, "Oh, okay, I've stopped listening. You don't have to verbalize it, but in some way, just acknowledge it in your brain, and find a process to then return to focus. So your brain has wandered, return. So something, and it can be something quite conscious. It might be, I don't know, like tapping yourself on the arm or clapping your hands together or something like that acknowledges that you're back in the room, something for yourself. And then, if you're back on, you've established your focus again, and you'll probably wander again at some point during the conversation further down the line. So that was a nice one. That stuck with me.
Just for the benefit of our listeners then, the wander aspect?
Yeah. Wander.
Is that a good thing? Yeah.
Wandering. It can be, because you might be in a creative session, you're looking for inspiration from elsewhere. But if you're immersed in a one-to-one conversation and you feel like you've lost your thread, you've lost your way through the conversation because you've wandered, you've become distracted by what time we've got to take the cat to the vets, then your brain has wandered, right? So
I always remember it as, it's inevitable,
yes,
that your mind will wander. So don't kick yourself, because that just means you're going to wander for longer. Oh, bad, Jeff, you forgot. You stopped listening. Okay, well, all the time that I'm berating myself there, theoretically, then I'm still wandering.
Yeah.
Whereas if I can say, oh, okay, I wandered there, now I'm coming back.
Yeah.
You come back a lot quicker, and you train yourself.
Yeah.
So that, I think, for me, is don't assume you're never, or don't try, don't aim for not wandering. Just aim to come back quicker.
Mm. Something and something. I wonder if it's related. But you see, so I watch a lot of rugby on the television now. And if a team scores a try, if concedes a try, you see quite a lot of professional teams now. They group together, they huddle up, and they all consciously in synchronization, and they take two breaths like that. But they do it in sync, and I think there's a biologically there's a way, that's a way to get on oxygen back to your brain. But I think it's also designed to reset a conscious, okay, that's happened for whatever reason, and now we're back at, we've got to reset and regroup, and we go again.
Okay.
Which is a similar thing. I think it's probably different, but in my mind, quite similar.
Yeah, very good.
Excellent.
Very good.
So we're conscious of your listening stamina with these podcasts. So we aim for somewhere between 30 and 45 minutes. So I think we've hit that, Jeff. So I think this is a good time to draw a close. But good chat. I like that.
All right. Cheers, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. And hope you did all the way through. The question.
Sure, I did that.
The test will be coming later. Cheers, everyone. All the best.
Cheers, all. Cheers.